Good evening, everybody. I'm Israel, and I'm an alcoholic. All right. Our speaker this evening is pretty special to me. I actually met him my very first AA meeting when I first came into these rooms, and his shares have been, important to me. They've resonated with me, and our speaker struck me as being very honest, open, and he's always got a lot of good things to say. He's from Tulare. And his home group is the Rainbow Group. So everybody, please give a big welcome to Brian Pete.
All right. Something's happening up here. It's like a wheel scrolling. Hi, everybody. My name is Brian Pete. I am an alcoholic. Thanks. Where'd everybody go? Okay. Thanks, Israel, for the great introduction. No pressure tonight. And thanks, Bill, for reaching out to me and getting me here tonight. I haven't been to a speaker meeting in a while, probably at least a year. And I haven't spoken at a speaker meeting in longer than that, way longer than that. Probably this group was the last time I shared for this amount of time. And I was just telling Israel, I'm like such a germaphobe, right? Like having to see all these people, you're beautiful people, right? But having to hug people and shake people's hands and stuff, I was a germaphobe before this whole mess. But man, that's like, if I walk through that fear, this is going to be a piece of cake. So, congratulations to all the newcomers, all the people that took chips tonight. I have walked up. It used to be a stage, but I've walked up on this stage many times to take many newcomer chips. I've been around AA for a long time, but I have 1 year, 11 months, and 10 days today. Asking Israel, what do I talk about? And I'll just stick to the format, but I want to focus. Well, we'll see what happens. I'm an alcoholic for sure. I know that. To the core of my being, I have no doubt in my mind now what that means to me. I have done enough research to know that that's what I suffer from, and I've been blessed with running out of ideas. But that took like 13 years in AA. Bouncing in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out. The great thing for me, I was blessed. I didn't stay out for very long. I'm like one of those idiots that like gets loaded and comes back the next day because it's so awful. It was really embarrassing to be around for so long and have to stand up and take so many newcomer chips. And so for a while, I would just take dirty chips and I would lie about stuff. And, I just didn't want to. I didn't want to disappoint people, nobody cared, I've said this before, I think probably the only thing I did right all those years was just keep coming back, and thank God, we don't shoot our wounded here, and people that really know what we're dealing with in Alcoholics Anonymous, don't take this personally, right, that we've relapsed or that we've gone out, they understand that we suffer from alcoholism, and I would just ask, like, why did I drink again, or why did I go out, or what happened, and I just didn't know, I didn't know what I suffer. I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't really know that I was an alcoholic. I mean, I just kept relapsing and relapsing, and I wanted to know why, so I would go to therapy, and I would do all this outside work and all this stuff, and I just wanted to know why I kept relapsing, and it never occurred to me that I was drinking because I was a drunk. It's so obvious. A little bit of my story, I grew up in an alcoholic home. I always felt different. I was very effeminate as a kid. I'm not much less effeminate now. I get mammed a lot at drive-thrus, and you might not know, but with a mask, I felt different. I was different, and that didn't make me an alcoholic, but it definitely made me desire relief. I just didn't want to be in my skin. I didn't want to be me. I didn't want to live in Tulare. I didn't want to be from Tulare. I didn't want to have an alcoholic father. I didn't want to have a rageaholic mother. I needed a drink. By the time I could get a drink, I really, really needed one. The problem is that I suffer from alcoholism. So the first drink I got, I had an allergic reaction to, like severe. I puked in my pants at school. Like I got so, the first time I drank, I got so drunk, I went to school, I puked, I vomited in my pants. I passed out in the bathroom in fourth period. I woke up halfway through lunch, the stall door open at Tulare Union High School, completely naked, throw up in my pants. I washed my pants out. I went to back to AP Calculus. I auditioned for the school play, and I got the lead. And that was the kind of the story of my drinking career. You know, I drank to excess all the time. I don't know what it's like to have one drink. There's no point to it, you know? And I don't have control over how much I drink. I don't get to say when is enough, you know? I don't even like what I was drinking that day. I can remember it. I don't like whatever it was, Boone's Farm or you know, Bartles and James, I think is what we had that day. And I don't get to... you know, I tried and tried and tried to control and manage that for a long time. But what I learned that day is I didn't suffer any consequences for my actions. And because I looked a certain way and I could pretend to be a good kid and I could kind of get by, nobody suspected me. You know, so I didn't like getting sick. I didn't like drinking that much. I liked the effect, but I wanted to get the hell out of my town and I wanted to get the hell out of my house. So I stopped. I didn't drink a lot in high school. So I just like became this perfect little kid that got really good grades and got the hell out of town and moved to Los Angeles. And that's where my drinking went really bad. You know, like same thing happens. I get to school. I'm going to college. I'm the first person in my family to go to college. Right. And, I get there the first day and I'm on my best behavior and I get voted in as like whatever, dorm president. That night I go to a party. I get so drunk that I am almost kicked out of my dorm because I have done some really crazy things I don't remember. Like crawling into people's beds and doing some weird stuff in the shower and all kinds of stuff. And I don't have any kinds of, I don't have any recollection of this. All I know is I'm in a lot of trouble, and it's because I drank rum, right? So then I'm never drinking rum again, right? So rum's not for me. I'm going to try something else. So, you know, what happened in school is that, you know, I would hook up with people and become friends with people that drank like me, or I thought drank like me, right? So, and now that I look back on it, you know, I got really sick my sophomore year in college. I had some kidney problem, like kidney disease or kidney fit. I was like having problems with my kidneys. I was so, so sick and came up here for vacation and I was getting alcohol poisoning on the weekends. I couldn't finish my classes. I nearly like would almost fail a class because I couldn't go to the final because I was so drunk I couldn't show up or I was so sick. But I kissed so much butt that I like got through it, you know, like people, I was nice when I was sober and people liked me and I was a good person. I was just an alcoholic, right? So I just didn't suffer any consequences and it never occurred to me that, you know, that this drinking was a problem. You know, everybody around me was getting drunk and sick. Everybody around me was throwing up. What happened for me was that after college ended, I thought my drinking career was over, right? There's no more parties. There's no more reason to drink every day. Wrong. I drank every day for 10 years. And what happened is that I saw people who graduated with me stop drinking the way that I was drinking and stop partying the way that I was partying. And they started to pay off their student loans and they started to grab families and they started to like get careers. And I was waiting tables, and I was struggling to pay my rent, and I was depressed all the time, and I couldn't sleep, and I swore to myself, like, I thought for sure I would not be able to sleep if I didn't drink myself to sleep at night. Like, I remember thinking, I was so afraid to have nightmares that I thought I had only been passing out for 10 years. I didn't know how to fall asleep. So if I wasn't drunk enough, I couldn't fall asleep. So it became this thing that I had to do. And it didn't occur to me I had a problem, you know, because it was still kind of fun. You know, I would lived in L.A. and I didn't drink in the house because I had all these rules that they named off in the chapter that we just read. Never drinking at home, taking a trip, not drinking on the job, all that stuff. So I went out to drink. So, and that's stupid because that costs a lot of money, right? And when you're a waiter and you only make $40 a night or something in tips, I spent it all on alcohol, you know? That was a long time ago. That's why I only made $40. And the place I worked at didn't sell booze, so I was just selling coffee and salad and stuff. You don't make a lot of money. But I would spend all my, I would eat at the restaurant and I would go out and I'd spend all my tips on booze and alcohol. Alcohol is booze, yeah. And so what happened is that I started to black out. And I lived in L.A. I drove a car every day. I was drunk every day. And I did not I started to get home and not know how I got home, or I wouldn't know where my car was. I don't think I ever killed anybody. I've even gotten pulled over. There's a funny story, and then I'll get sober right after this. St. Patrick's Day, right? Like, big drinking holiday. And I got really, really wasted. And by this time, I'm not getting sick anymore because I've perfected this thing, right? I just don't get sick anymore. But I don't know when I'm going to get drunk. So I could have one drink and be totally blasted and blacked out, or I could drink all night and not get loaded at all. So I'm at this weird place now in my drinking where I don't know how much is going to do it. So this was one of those nights where I just drank and drank and drank and didn't feel drunk. And I drove through a police barricade on Sunset and Sweetser, right at the Sunset Strip. And it was St. Patrick's Day. It's the night they pop everybody, right? So I drove through something like a caution tape and some barricades, and they sandwiched my car. And I drove up and I stopped in the middle of Sunset Boulevard. And the cops pulled me over. I backed into the place, and I'm like 25 or 26 at this time. And I got out of the car and I was like irate, like, you almost killed me. Like, why are these here? I live in this neighborhood and these are never here. And, you know, all this stuff. And they gave me a sobriety test. And, man, I got sober fast. I passed that whole thing. And I was so drunk, I don't know how I got out of it, right? It didn't help me. You know, like, that, I don't know why I didn't get arrested. I don't know why I didn't get a DUI that. I don't know. You know, maybe God knew that I wouldn't be able to handle it or something. But I didn't get sober for many years after that, you know. But what happened is I started to go out with friends, and I would say to people, I'm not going to drink tonight. I'll be the sober driver, right? I could never do it. I did it every night, and I'd be like, I'm not drinking tonight. I'm going to be the designated driver. And I even made friends with this bouncer, and I'm like, dude, I'm not drinking tonight. I'm just going to hang out here with you. And like an hour later, I'd be inside drinking. I come up, and I'm like, oh, I'm so messed up. I drank again. And he's like, yep, like, try it again tomorrow. Like, and I found out later he was 30 years sober, and he was just coaching me into AA just by, like, being a good friend and saying, try it again tomorrow. And I tried it again tomorrow. So eventually, you know, I found the rooms of AA, and the first meeting I went to, I was really, really scared. You know, it had progressed to other things. You know, alcohol had stopped working, and I started adding other substances, and because I couldn't get the relief that I got from alcohol, it just stopped working. You know, it wasn't my friend anymore. And so I found AA, and it changed my life. You know, the first meeting I went to was in 2004. It was in Los Angeles, and the recovery community is really strong down there. It's way different. There's a lot of, I was in Hollywood, and I was also in the entertainment industry, and I was an actor. And so there was a lot of, like, who you know, and a lot of look good, and a lot of networking that happens. And And I think I got distracted, you know, and by that, and I just wasn't ready, you know. I didn't want what I was getting. I didn't want to get drunk anymore. I didn't want to disappear anymore. I didn't want to feel insane anymore. But I also couldn't stop. And that was really scary. Like, I would come into AA and I want this thing so bad. And I would see people come in on a court card. And that person that didn't even want to get sober is like 13 years sober now. And I would blow my mind because I wanted it so bad. I wanted to get sober so bad and stop doing this. And I didn't, because I wanted a different life. So, you know, it took many, many years for me to be able to be introduced to some people that could talk to me in a way and had the same experience that I had with not being able to understand this thing and not being able to get out of my own way, to take me through the steps and sit across from me and take me through literally the big book, line by line, word by word, little sentence by little sentence. And I had a spiritual experience, you know, and it wasn't, it was like they describe in the big book. It was the educational variety. You know, I had a lot of white light experiences too, but they're usually for other people, right? My big white light experiences are seeing like that thing. Somebody comes in on a court card, doesn't want to get sober. You know, and they get sober and they're here for 13 years and they're, you know, their life changes. Those are my white light experiences. But mine for me was, for getting sober was going through the steps with another person who had a similar experience to me of, still having some ideas about what life was supposed to look like. You know, I came in really angry at God. I had a lot of childhood trauma, a lot of abuse in my family. I felt entitled to whatever I could get out of life. You know, whether it was a career, a partner, whatever I could get out of life was owed to me because I had been so hurt as a child. And I was pretty much a good person, except that I was, you know, selfish, self-centered, and I, like, ruined everybody's lives that I touched, right? But I'm, like, a nice person, right? Like, I think I'm a good person. At heart, I'm a good person. The problem is that I endear people to me, and then I abandon them, just like I was abandoned as a kid. And there's no better way for me to abandon myself than to pick up a drink. You know, because I don't have to think about anything. I don't have to feel guilty till tomorrow. and, you know, I just could, it was my higher power is what it comes down to. Alcohol was a power greater than myself, right? It gave me the ease and comfort that I needed to get through life. And until I could find something else that would replace that and do that same thing for me, I really didn't have a chance in AA. And I wasn't really willing when I came in to turn my life, my will and my life over to a power greater than myself because I still believed in the God that I was taught as a kid. And that God didn't like gay people. He didn't like me. He didn't like who I loved. He didn't like all these things that I had to get rid of in AA through a second step with a sponsor, you know? So that I could believe in something that I couldn't name, that I didn't trust, that I didn't know what it was, that didn't have a face, didn't have a name, that I could just turn my will on and the only reason I was willing to do it is because I really came to a point, where I knew that I couldn't do it anymore. Like I know I can't stay sober. I can get sober, but I can't stay sober. And there's nowhere else to go. I've done all the therapy. I've done all the work. I've done all of the self-help books. And the only place for me to go is back to AA. And I met somebody who talked with me and took me through the steps, and you know, he asked me if I was willing to have a new experience, and I was like, ugh, God, another one, you know, like, but it never occurred to me that I'd just been having the same experience in AA, because I, you know, I was turning my will and my life over to, like, my sponsor. I was turning my will and my life over to the work, you know, doing the steps, or I was turning my will and my life over to my home group or to my commitments, you know. I was that person in AA that was doing the coffee commitment, the treasury commitment. I was running all over town. I had three commitments. I was going to three meetings a day, you know, and I was getting loaded. And so I had a different experience when I realized that the last thing that I hadn't tried God, you know, and I didn't even know how to, and I just ran out of enough ideas to be able to be honest with my sponsor and say, I hate God. And, because I was afraid to say that, because I thought this God that I didn't really believe in or that was going to still punish me for saying that or thinking that. But being able to say that was like the opening for me to be able to start to be honest about my relationship with the higher power. To say, I don't really know who God is. And, you know, that doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. And let's talk about this. And who's your higher power? And can I borrow that? And, yeah, that doesn't work for me. So things started to change, and I was able to do the work, and it was way easier than I'd ever done any other work. It was tedious, because I did it this very certain way that leaves no room for error, I guess. Well, it does, I guess, for error. I don't know, but it doesn't leave any room for creativity. And my mind likes to get creative. I want to write a story. I want to tell you my life story. I want to do some homework. I want to get an A on it, and I want to get the prizes, right? I want to graduate and get all the stuff and not have to do it anymore. And this way was like, this is boring. How am I going to get sober like this? But what happened is the book, for me, the big book became a magical experience. I started to see myself on the pages. I started to identify as an alcoholic. I started to understand what I suffered from. And I started to rely on a higher power because my sponsor wouldn't answer my questions. I would call for help and he would say, did you pray about it? Did you ask God about this? You know, and he was constantly directing me to a higher power that I hated, that I didn't trust, that I didn't like, that I didn't know. And I would say, no, I didn't. Well, why don't you talk to God about it and call me back when you get the answer, you know? And it just made me so upset. But what I do today when I work with people is I do the same thing, right? I'm able to take them through the steps just like I was taken through. I'm able to direct them to God because I'm not their higher power, and no human power can relieve me of my alcoholism. And I don't know who their higher power is. It's none of my business, right? But they've got to find something that's going to work for them. And I only know what's the only thing that's ever worked for me is AA. And if I hadn't been in AA that whole time, I'd be dead. I know that for sure. So I'm going to check my time here. When do I need to wrap up? Right now? 7:45? Okay. I got 10 minutes? All right. So I got sober. I relapsed. I finally got sober. So what's different today for me, I think, is that I have a connection to a higher power that I still don't know, understand. I don't have any other word for it other than God. I don't have a face to it, but I am so close I cry a lot too, but it's usually just when something feels true to me, but I'm so close to my higher power, or my higher power is so close to me that it isn't separate from me. It's inside, you know? But I forget all the time. I forget unless I'm backed into a corner and then somebody reminds me, right, did you pray? Did you talk to God? Did you ask for help? Because I want help from you. I still want help from you. I want help from Bill. I want somebody to tell me what to do. Because I'll follow instructions. I just want to feel better. The best instruction is to go to God with everything, right? And it's the last thing I think of. Still. You know, and that's why it's important for me to come to AA, where people will laugh at that and go, yeah, me too. Isn't that crazy, right? But today, what's different for me is, like, my life doesn't look anything like I wanted it to look. I mean, my dream as a kid was to move out of Tulare, become a famous actor, win an Oscar, somehow magically not be gay, right? Marry Julia Roberts, because I would, that's the one, right? If there was one that was going to do it for me, it's Julia Roberts. I'm that old. But she's still, but that was my dream, is I just didn't want to be me. I did not want to be me. So what God did, I guess, you know, or circumstances did, universe did, God did, is, you know, I tried it my way. It didn't work. You know, it got worse and worse and worse. And I finally had to come home, and home is here. And it was so shameful. I'm so full of shame. I felt so miserable. I had lost at the game of life, you know, and what am I going to do here? You know? What am I going to do here? I don't want to live here. I don't want to be around here. You know, this is where I got beat up. This is where I got molested. This is where I ran away from, right? And I didn't understand why God couldn't go. Back here, and I still don't know. somebody told me, you know, grow where you're planted, you know. And when I got back here a couple of years ago, God, I was dying again. You know, I was back in AA. I was in and out of the rooms. I thought, oh, you know, LA's the problem. You know, it's all the drug dealers I know and all the bars I go to. If I just move someplace else, I don't know anybody. It only takes 5 seconds to figure it out. We are very resourceful. And now I got a whole group of people here that I don't want to see and run into and all that stuff. And I'm the crazy person. I'm the sober person, you know, that gets loaded and freaks out on people and starts talking about AA and how did I ruin it? You want to come to a meeting with me? I like to 12-step people when I'm loaded, right? That's awesome. And nobody wants to be around me, right? It's like awful. So, but what's different today is that I have a life that I don't recognize. I live in it. I live here. I love it. I live in Visalia, not Tulare. I don't know if I would love Tulare if I lived there. I lived there when I first moved back. But I got to spend the last, I got to spend the last 3 years. My sister died. I got to spend the last 3 years of her life with her, you know. So that's a blessing, you know. And I get to be sober today, and I get to be of service, and I get to have a life beyond my wildest dreams, you know. I work in an industry that helps people who are just like me. You know, people who, I want to cry like this. People who feel like they don't belong, they don't have family that supports them, you know, I work with an LGBT center here in town, and that's something that God threw in my lap and is a real gift. It saved my life, and it saved countless others' lives as well. And that was not my dream, man. I don't want to help people. I'm tired. You know, I don't want to help, and I still don't want to help people. I still don't want to. I still don't want to take, I still don't want to meet with my sponsees. I complain every single time, but after I'm done, I got more out of it than they did. They don't, still don't know what we're talking about, and I'm like, I just did another first step, you know, like, for what has happened is that this thing that I thought I didn't understand is totally the opposite of what I thought it was. I thought if I worked the steps and I did it right, I would be gifted sobriety. And that was the opposite of my experience this time. I was gifted sobriety and I was able to work the steps because I was sober to maintain a conscious contact with God and my understanding and to build a relationship and clean up the wreckage of my past so that I can be of use to the world, not just in AA, but in the world. To be a productive member of society and to be a good husband and a good brother and a good son. Be all the things I wanted to be but couldn't be because I was just an alcoholic. I was sick. You know, and the gift now is that when I go through the steps with somebody else, I get to work the steps again. Over and over and over and over again. You know, and that has been the biggest gift, I think, for me is that, you know, most of them don't even stick around. They're just like me. They're full of ideas. And it's so sad to watch, but I'm not in control, you know, and they've got a path. You know, I don't know if I've ever seen, I don't think I've ever worked with somebody who's been able to get this, you know, but they keep coming back just like I did. You know, and I'm really, really grateful I was able to be here tonight. Thanks for laughing. you know, and I wish I had something to say. I guess just the message is like, no matter what, keep coming back. Like this is the only thing I did right this whole 15 years. So thanks. Thank you.